The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
This is Mike Consul, one of the editors at Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Welcome to Report from Europe. Our guest is Tony Triscothic. He is an executive with Studivest, a company that specializes in bringing developers and investors in the purpose-built student housing market together. He joins us to discuss the opportunities that exist for investing in student housing in Central and Eastern Europe. Tony, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, this is a really interesting topic, Tony. We've written about this fairly extensively, not though about Central and Eastern Europe. And anytime we talk about it or write about it, it carries a lot of interest. So, you have indicated, now you wrote a piece for the magazine for Institutional Real Estate Europe, that indicated that Central and Eastern Europe are increasingly looking like viable student housing investment locations. Why is that the case?
Absolutely. I've been in, as you mentioned, I've been in this sector for 8 years now. And I've seen the dramatic rise in popularity of student housing, particularly in the UK, with record transaction volumes. And what I've noticed is that is actually sweeping across from the UK now through into Western Europe. And in the last couple of years, we've seen some really dramatic increases in activity and institutional investment into student housing, often called student accommodation. In Germany, for example, it's seen a 380% increase in investment. France, just under 250%. So I think this will spread across Europe. And I particularly think what we're going to see is that investors are going to be seeking that to receive the higher yields they can get from student housing. And I actually think what we're seeing at the moment in big centres like London, big investors there are still vying to buy scale, and they're paying premium prices for developments that are changing hands there. But of course, that is going to compress yields. So I think what they're going to be doing is they're going to be looking eastwards to continue to get those yields from the more frontier sectors.
So let's talk about what nations in Central and Eastern Europe are especially ripe for student housing.
Yeah, okay. We've actually met with developers in several countries, in particular Poland, Czech Republic, Hungary, Austria, those countries. And what we've noticed is there is real, seriously rising numbers of foreign students. Now, foreign students are a group that is especially suited and often much more able to afford the kind of premium accommodation that simply isn't available in the current housing stock within those areas. Now, I visited some of these countries. I spent a lot of time in Poland, for example, and I've seen the tremendous growth in foreign students that they're experiencing. Their foreign student numbers have risen by over 650% in the last sort of 10 years or so.
What is driving that, Tony? What's driving the surge of foreign students into Poland and maybe some other countries?
Well, what it is I think it's a number of things. What it is, first of all, I think, is the fact that the governments themselves are actually spotting the opportunities of growing their own knowledge economy. They can see the fact that they can help their own national economies by exporting their higher education to the tremendous growth that there is in global student mobility. So what they're spotting is the opportunity not just to recruit students from the Far East, the Middle East, certainly other parts of Europe. They're also looking at creating in 2, 3, 4 years' time very highly qualified technical people, professionals, scientists, that they're actually going to be able to offer employment to. And their growing economies need those kind of skills, and they're very happy to import those skills from other countries.
Well, let me ask you this then. Is the move to Poland by students, is it because Poland has particularly good institutions of higher learning, or is it because they're making it's affordable and they're making special accommodations for foreign students? Because Poland has never been, I've never heard Poland referred to as a country that's got highly technical universities or especially good institutions of higher learning. So are there some other inducements that are being brought to bear?
Well, it's a combination. I think this is something that I've noticed. I mean, I've been looking at this region now for quite a few years, and what I've noticed is that a lot of investors have kind of missed what's happening in that region. Some of the growth in the economies in the region has been outstanding. We've now got major multinational companies like Amazon and other companies with their fulfillment centers. I actually saw one myself middle of last year, where it was about the size of about 20 football pitches. It's amazing what growth has actually occurred. So the economies are strong. There are employment opportunities. But many of the universities in these countries have very long historical traditions. They specialize in many occasions in medicine, engineering, science. So I think what's actually happened is that over the years, these countries have kept their lights under a bushel. They certainly haven't been noticed. But of course, what they are able to do is to provide really good, high quality education. And a European degree is very much a something of appeal. If you're going to come from Africa or parts of Asia, a European degree is certainly something that is very prestigious. And so what these youngsters are noticing is, I can get an education in a good European university where the cost of living is much lower, certainly much lower than it would be in certain parts of Western Europe and the UK. In certain cases, they may get some government support. Hungary, for example, will provide financial support for students. So there's very much the appeal now for those students who, want to get a good degree, which they can in these universities. They will get the experience of moving into a part of Europe that is growing, is progressing. You walk around Warsaw, which is the capital of Poland, and the new building that's going on there, the new steel and glass skyscrapers are impressive. So you've got a very much, it's very much something which is new. It's a location that people haven't considered before. So it does mean, and certainly from investors' point of view, because it is a frontier, because it's new, because it's somewhere that other people are not looking at, it means that early movers into the area are going to take advantage of these opportunities, mm-hmm. which will not be there for very long.
Okay, so what you're talking about here is the table has been set for private student housing now, what's happening in Poland and in other countries. So here's my next question is, what are the key criteria for assessing whether student housing will succeed in a particular market? How do you determine that? Because obviously, even in a good market or a ripe market, a bad investment can be made. So what's the criteria that tells a developer or an investor that this is the place to put some money with private student housing that will succeed for you?
Sure, absolutely. The key criteria are really critical because it's not a case of build the rooms and they will come. It isn't like that. You have to look very carefully at the area that you're actually considering. Clearly, the demand has to be there. As I mentioned, we are seeing rising numbers of primarily foreign students, and it's foreign students who are beginning to see a dramatic increase in their interest in these countries, as I said, in Poland and also in the Czech Republic. What we would look for is the demand. We're looking for people who are saying, look, really, the existing housing stock is just not suitable. In many occasions, the housing stock, which is there already, are shared multi-occupancy dormitories, if you like, which simply are not going to appeal to foreign students. And those are the ones who have the money to go and pay for premium accommodation. So it's basically the demand that is there. We want to look for the demand. We also want to see that the universities and the government behind it are actually actively looking to build their recruitment, and that's what we're noticing. That's something that we look at. We look at the activities that the local communities, in terms of the academics, and the government themselves, are actually doing, what they're looking to attract people from abroad. So that's what we have a look at. We've also looked carefully at the current supply. How many beds are currently provided for students? There's a term called the provision rate, which we use in the business, which basically says what percentage of the student population have accommodation or housing specifically provided for them. Some of these countries, again, looking at Poland, because it's such a great example, 91% of students going to universities currently in Poland are entirely on their own when it comes to finding suitable living quarters. There's nothing provided for them, for 91% of them.
You mean no dormitories? No dormitories on the campus?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There are dormitories, but they are massively oversubscribed. There simply aren't enough of them. And what they are of very much outmoded and outdated quality. It's certainly... Because, of course, things have moved on in these countries. I mean, they to some extent, we're all grown up seeing films of Checkpoint Charlie and what that region was like 50 years ago. It's very different. The young people in these countries, they are exactly the same as everybody else. They are prepared to pay a premium to have some privacy, but they also want to have the normal amenities that youngsters would want. Internet, of course, is absolutely critical, particularly in this connected age where people need to be in touch, particularly for research, submitting the actual work that they actually do. But we also look at some detail at the quality of the universities that are in those locations. Many universities across the world are maybe not as competitive as they were, because higher education has become an extremely competitive marketplace. People now can see, they can check out what their course is going to be like from their own house on the other side of the world. They can look at campuses, they can see what the teaching staff are like, what their qualifications are. They can check all of these things. So it's important that when we're looking at a project in conjunction with a developer, or if we're talking to an investor who's saying, look, I want to invest, but tell me where to go, we've got to make sure that the demand for places in the local university is going to be high, because that will lead to high demand for the students' accommodation.
Okay, so one of the big questions, Tony, is what kind of returns is student housing pulling, and are they sustainable over time? Now, the U.S. and U.K., you've made the point that those are both mature markets, and they've done very well in the United States, and I assume in the U.K. Just across the board, or perhaps you can geo-target this a little bit, what kind of returns is student housing pulling, and how sustainable will that be?
This gets to the heart of what I feel and many others within the industry regard as a key benefit, shall we say, of student housing. We talk about sustainability. And that is a very important element of any investment vehicle or any investment asset of any kind. We may be looking at high rates today, investors will say, but what's going to happen tomorrow? What happens if there's a downturn? What happens if we have another global financial crisis? What happens then? Well, this is where student housing is very different from virtually all other asset classes. What we can point at is that history has shown that in times of depression, when the markets or economies are poor, more people will go to university because they want to get a better qualifications, which will help them to get a better chance of getting whatever jobs are available. Now, when the economies are booming, the need and the demand then for applicants to have higher qualifications has stepped up a bit. So therefore, even in those circumstances, people have to then still strive to get higher qualifications. And so universities globally and the housing that the students attending those universities will require has tended to see there is much less volatility in demand, in occupation rates, than there would be maybe in retail, for example, where we've all seen what happened in the global financial crisis, and we've seen how many shopping centres, shopping malls. I've seen them myself. I've been across the States. I've travelled through many parts of Europe. Many shopping centres, you see many empty units. But that's the effect of any economic downturn. We don't tend to get that in student housing. So it does lead to the conclusion that there is a greater degree of sustainability where you have a resistance to the forces of the cycles of the world economy. Now, what we're seeing currently at the moment, and you look into London, shall we say, which is probably one of the best known centres for higher education, has some of the best universities in the world, as we all know. But of course, there's also massive demand. In the last two or three years, we've seen something like about $12-13 billion coming into the UK. Much of that has been driven into London. So what we're seeing at the moment is that net yields in prime developments in London are providing yields of under 4%, about 3.75%. Outside London, we expect them to be a little higher because London prices tend to be greater. So out in the provinces, you'll see rates of 4, 4.5, maybe a little bit under 5. Now, the US is actually a bit of a surprise because that's actually yielding a little under 6%. But we think that will probably slip somewhat as institutions start to compete more than they are at the moment for US student housing. Now, when you compare that to what's happening over in the region we're talking about, Central and Eastern Europe, although it's a little hard to really give a truly accurate view on what yields are going to be doing in those regions, because there's so little turnover at the moment, because, of course, it's a frontier market, it's just getting started. But developers that we're talking to, and on a conservative basis, they're looking at yields of the 7 to 7.5% kind of number. So we're looking at a good premium of sometimes 3% over what we're getting into the more mature markets, maybe certainly in the UK and other parts of Europe. But I come back to this element where it's the sustainability that is key. It's very much the case that we will see investors will always go for high quality assets. Some investors will say, look, we're going to go for accommodations which we can buy in London. We know the yields are going to be between 3 or 4%, but we're happy to go for that because it's at the quality end. Other investors are more yield driven and they'll say, I want more, and I think I'm happy to actually look further afield. So what we're basically saying is that student housing generally, provided you're careful where you locate your property, you do all the criteria checks that we mentioned before, we actually think that student housing has got a long, long way to go in helping investors to get good returns on their investments, particularly when other assets like bonds and equities are not delivering, or if they are delivering, they're certainly delivering high levels of volatility, which many people simply aren't prepared to accept.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the difference between private student housing and campus-based housing or dormitories in Central and Eastern European countries. I will again refer to the United States. When I was in college, the dormitories were extremely spare. Today, campus dormitories are luxury by comparison, but the off-campus housing being built by private companies are like resorts. Is that the kind of stuff that we're already seeing in Central and Eastern Europe?
Well, to a great extent, I think that our sector of the market, shall we say, that those of us who are looking to promote these new areas, I think we can learn some really important lessons from what's happened in the UK and the US. I think there is a very, very exportable business model where you can design, develop, build, and then operate extremely comfortable, well-appointed accommodation and housing for students that will give them very much, and it will respond to their needs, because the student of today is probably very different from many people's views of what student life is like. Certainly in the UK, there were numerous TV sitcoms which looked at students living in bigs, as we call them, which were usually in an attic or something with beer cans and rats running all around the place. Well, that's very different these days. The whole market has actually changed. Particularly, and when we look, and I've looked at these things, I've been around them, I've seen these dormitory-style high-rise concrete blocks. They're not attractive. There's very little privacy. They're usually shared rooms. They're not really suitable for foreign students. Bear in mind, some of these youngsters have left home for the first time ever. Many of them are coming from not just different countries, but different continents, different cultures. What they are bringing with them, though, is the necessary finance to be able to pay for better quality of accommodation. What the youngsters want these days, they certainly need security. That's a big plus. And all the projects that we're involved in, access control is really important. They need to know who's in the building, and they're not anybody who's going to cause trouble. It's important that they have things like utilities provided, like the electricity or gas or water, whatever is needed. So it's very much giving people the opportunity, these younger people, the opportunity to concentrate on enjoying their experience at university. It's very hard to do that when you're sharing a room with three or four other people that you may not know. There's very little community facilities like barbecue areas, kitchens, cinemas, TV rooms, even those sorts of things. That's what youngsters want. Particularly bear in mind, in many occasions, what we are looking at is a growing, more collaborative type of environment that a lot of the younger people from the generation, or late generation X, or millennials, and the generation Z, where they're much more looking at the working in sort of co-working opportunities, maybe co-living, if you like, as well. So they're much more used to having their own private space, but getting together on the ground floor or whatever to watch a football game or something, whatever it might be.
Sure.
It's these types of things that people are actually looking for, and they simply aren't going to get those in the on-campus, pretty much old-fashioned type of blocks, which are not really what the the young generation are looking for these days.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about foreign real estate capital flows into those countries right now, just generally. Aside from student housing, if you look at the real estate sector overall, is the capital flows coming from overseas into Central and Eastern European countries, is it brisk and is it on the rise? Is it flat or is it declining?
Yes. Over the past 20 years or so, what we've noticed, and the figures are there, let's sort of put it into some kind of context, the whole real estate investment within the whole region is nothing like you would see in Western Europe or within the UK, or certainly not within within the US. We are looking. It's all relative, if you like. But what that actually basically means is, don't expect to be in the multi hundreds of billions of dollars of inward investment coming in. But what we are seeing are very strong growth areas, particularly currently in offices, logistics centers. I mentioned before, Amazon have a massive logistics center. There's one in a city called Wrocław in Poland, which is huge. There is a tremendous amount of money coming in. Let's keep the kind of scale in proportion. But of course, that doesn't mean to say that it's too small not to be noticed, because it's a really important area. It's a really important region. It's very important for the whole of Europe that this region has the opportunity to grow, because it's central to the future of a Europe that actually wants to trade together, work together, and grow together.
Okay, let me ask you this, Tony. Let me ask you this. In terms of risk, what we're seeing right now is in places like Hungary and in places like Poland, there seems to be this softening of commitment towards democracy. And we know that free markets and free or open political systems are very good for, and transparency is very good for real estate investing. Is there a political issue here at all that because some of these countries are starting to trend more towards a little bit more towards an authoritarian type of model, and we have seen in these instances like this where the state, I mean Vladimir Putin being an extreme example, just deciding, well, here's a really nice oil company that generates a lot of cash, I will take it over. What kind of risk is involved? What kind of political risk is there? Do you feel that that's something that's acute, or is it overstated?
I think it's overstated. Having said that, I actually bring this up because I actually believe that it's something that people should be talking about. I think what we have to consider is that the many of these countries have only really been running their own interests, shall we say, in a relatively short period of time. So therefore, what we're seeing is that these countries are now having the opportunity to decide how they want to run their own affairs after many years of interference from other sectors. Do bear in mind that, of course, a number of these, Poland in particular, are members of the European Union. They're members of NATO and various other joint organizations where they are strongly bonded into Europe. Now, as EU members, of course, they have to obey certain rules and they have to do things in a certain way. What they are looking at, I think, and this is purely a personal opinion, what they're looking at is their version, if you like, of what it means to be a member of the European Union. It's not necessarily everybody's view of what it is to be a member of the European Union. But they're very pro-Europe. They very much can see the benefit of being a strong contributor to a common market across the whole of Europe. Something like 370 billion euros have actually been provided to that region by the EU. So they're very much aware that it's to their advantage to share within that European dream but it's their version of it. And I think what often happens is that when you're on the outside looking in, you think, well, that must mean there's going to be tanks on the streets. And, well, I promise you, it's not like that. Warsaw and the other cities I've been to in the area are extremely open. The people are very much enjoying this new freedom that they had over the last 20 years or so. And I don't think that they're necessarily going to give that away in any particular with any particular speed.
That's good to hear. Our guest has been Tony Truskafic. He is an executive with Studivest, a company specializing in bringing together developers and investors in student housing, a very hot topic these days in the United States, the UK, and obviously spreading throughout Europe. And Tony has joined us by phone from, where are you, Tony? Are you in Casablanca or Marrakesh?
I'm actually in Cyprus, which is a small island in the eastern Mediterranean.
Of course, Cyprus. Well, strike a match, have a cigarette, do your next deal, and thanks for taking the time to alert us to some of these opportunities going on in Central and Eastern Europe.
Thank you, Mike. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. All the very best.